Roger. K2 Romeo India Whiskey is here. This is K2 KEY Mel. My name is Dick. At the time we begin check deck number 1190 of the series that began in September way back in 1982. And now you've heard me say Saddam many times that the main purpose of the check net is to help amateur radio operators get their questions answered about this fairly complicated hobby. I think there's 26 kinds of ham radio. My buddy Kent, K2VJB, thinks that there's a much larger number than that. Someday we'll find out. We'll have to list them all. I believe it was in a editorial page of QST magazine that the 25 or 26 kinds of ham radio were mentioned. 2-meter FM ham radio, which you're listening to right now, is one of those kinds. And we quite often talk about all the others. If you're tired about the one you're using, certainly try to give some emphasis to some of the others. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in would sound like K2KEY, Mel, and yes. So do we have any check-ins tonight? Please give me your call letters and name at this time. N2GOT Howard? No.
Mel, K2KEY. Oh, I got plenty of questions.
Glad to hear that, Howard and Mel. Anyone else?
K2YO, Bernie, yes.
MB2MKB, Mitch, no.
Kilo 6, Juliet, Sierra Victor, John, no.
HYY, Joe, yes.
Okay, so far we've got Howard with a no, Bernie with a yes, Mitch with a no, SBJ with a no, and Joe with a yes. Anyone else? Mr. QGZ, you are 95% noise and 1% signal, so that particular transmitter you're using, Bill, you're going to have to give us a little bit more steam. You may be way out in the boondocks there somewhere. Anyone else to check in? Please give me your call letters and name.
KC2MDP, Steve, and yes.
Howard, no.
Okay, I heard Steve with a yes, Howard with a no. Anyone else?
MD2C, no.
NV2C with a no, and no name. Okay, we got more than enough to get going. The first person with a yes was Bernie, K2 Yankee Oscar. Looks like you're number one on the runway, Bernie. Go right ahead with your question.
Good evening, Dick, Mel, and Ness. I was thinking this afternoon about a topic from a couple weeks ago, VHF antennas, specifically talking about what a quarter wave that has a ground plane on it. Actually, I believe it's a wider topic that I want to talk about the VHF in a minute. And my question, with the understanding that you must have a ground plane for a quarter wave antenna to operate correctly, how critical is the length of the antenna, or I'm sorry, the length of the radial to the ground plane? Does it really matter how long they are? What if you have multiple? Let's say that I have a quarter wave antenna, I put an appropriate length single ground radial. If I put a second on, does that count as twice the amount, or how specifically should you calculate the ground plane size?
I see the nature of what you're asking, Bernie, and it's a rather good question. It's an area that's very poorly understood. I'm going to give you a pre-paragraph answer, which is not the last word on the subject. A lot of it is opinion, based on 35 or 40 years of experience of building and testing and tweaking antennas. Let me start off by first telling you what your transmitter is, because that's what's really firing the antenna. Back in the old days, in 1920, quite often a ham radio operator on an HF frequency like 80 meters, his ham shack would be the attic of the wooden house is where his ham shack would be located. The transmitter would be right in the middle of the antenna, He'd run one wire out the northern window and another wire out the southern window, and he stood in the middle with the transmitter and fired the antenna. Eventually, ham radio operators got relegated to lower rooms in the house, particularly more convenient in the wintertime, and we started using a transmission line. So the transmission line, when it's doing its job just right, takes the power out of the transmitter, conveys it to the antenna, and when everything is set up just right, it acts as if the antenna is being fed by the transmitter right at the antenna. In other words, the transmission line acts like, tries to act like your transmitter is right at the middle of the antenna. Now, what does the transmitter really do? From one simplistic point of view, the transmitter is a pump. In the case of a full half-wave balanced symmetric dipole, it yanks some electrons out of the left-hand side of the dipole and pumps them into the right side of the dipole. That's what it does on the first half cycle. On the second half cycle, it takes the electrons that are on the right-hand side of the dipole and pumps them back to the left-hand side. So the transmitter is an electron pump. It's pushing electrons from one place to the other. That's how it launches a signal into the dipole. The signal itself bounces back and forth on the dipole multiple times before the energy of those electrons get radiated into space. I didn't say the electrons get radiated into space. The energy. A wave gets launched because current is flowing as those electrons jump back and forth on each half of the dipole. Many of our antennas, a high percentage of them, are a dipole. So it's appropriate to talk about that kind of an antenna. So, and the energy doesn't get coupled into space on one pass. Let me drop. A typical full wave, full half wave dipole, full size half wave dipole in free space, the energy has to bounce back and forth something like 20 times before it finally radiates in space. And of course the transmitter is continuing to supply energy for that period of time. So it's hard to figure out which wave is decaying and which one is being launched new. But take my word for it, that's going on. You could, if you want to, run a series of experiments where you abruptly turn off the transmitter and watch what happens to the current on the dipole. It'd be like the ringing of a bell. You would see the energy on the dipole slowly decay. And something like 70% of the energy would decay after 20 bounces, 20 waves, so to speak, of your particular frequency of operation. So what you and I call resonance of the antenna is where the length of the antenna is such that as the energy bounces back and forth, it stays in step from bounce to bounce. Make the antenna a little bit too short, and it starts bleeding in phase, and you and I call that a capacitive reactance on the antenna. It just really means that everything's not staying in step anymore. So a full half-wave dipole, your transmitter is pumping electrons from left side to the right side. Okay, take my word for it, a dipole is a pair of monopole antennas back-to-back, or ground plane antennas back-to-back. Because everything takes place along the wire, I could put a sheet of metal at a right angle, that at a normal incidence, right in the middle of the dipole. I could put a great big sheet of metal right in the middle of the dipole where one wire sticks out of the right side and the other wire sticks out of the left side of the sheet of metal. And because that is the point of symmetry, that sheet of metal I just described, nothing would happen because I put a sheet of metal there. Very few people have ever done that experiment, but you could. Once you realize that the sheet of metal does nothing, you realize the right-hand side of the dipole is a mirror image in that sheet of metal of what's happening on the left-hand side. So therefore, I could decide I'm not going to build the left-hand side of the dipole, I'm only going to build the right-hand side and the sheet of metal. I've now made a kind of a ground plane antenna. And now the 70-ohm antenna that I used to have becomes 35 ohms because I'm only feeding half of it with reference to that neutral plane, and the other half is being built as a mirror image. So if this is the best of all worlds, that ground plane antenna you and I build in the backyard should have a great big sheet of metal across the whole backyard and the dipole coming off at a right angle, at a normal angle to it. And that would work like a charm. Now you start asking yourself the question, how small can I make that sheet of metal? How skeleton the structure can I build and still have it work correctly? Lots of people have done that experiment. W2FMI is one of the people who has run somebody mentioned that name to me. Mr. W2FM
repeater, timeout, cancel.
A-V-I-C-K.
6 W2FMI, Dick.
Yeah, what's his name again? I missed that.
Jerry, J-E-R-R-Y. Jerry Civic, W2FMI.
Perfect. And you can see I'm getting senile. He and I were on the same day as once, 20-some-odd years ago, both giving talks on our favorite subject. So Jerry Civic has run lots of experiments, published a number of articles or so, 20 or so years ago, in QSD magazine, on electrically small antennas. And you can use less and less ground plane radio of shorter and shorter length, and you start getting degraded performance. And the degraded performance falls in two or three categories here, as I see it, Bernie. Number one, in the case of a ground plane antenna that's in my backyard, if the spacing between the wires starts getting larger and larger because I have less and less ground plane radials, the radio wave that I'm radiating starts seeing the ground. The radio wave can squeeze between those wires, and some of it gets coupled into the earth. And the earth is an extremely good dummy load. In the wintertime, if you only put down, let me put the number 3 ground plane radios, your standing wave ratio measurement in the shack would be great, all the signals going out the feed line, being coupled to that antenna, and you want to believe it's all being coupled into space. Well, a substantial percentage of it would be heating up the ground in your backyard and keeping the worms warm in the wintertime, so to speak. And so the one thing you and I cannot easily do is measure antenna efficiency. If 75% of my energy was heating up the ground in my backyard and only 25% of it's radiated to space, I'd still be able to talk to people. Some people would say, gee, you're not as loud as you should be with 100 watts and a good ground plane antenna. Maybe you're living on a very low piece of land, or maybe you've got a lot of blocking trees around you. They come up with excuses like that. And maybe the amount of energy you're coupling into the earth would be it. It would be a very difficult measurement to make. But the only way I can think of it is that you'd have to go a known distance away from the antenna and do a field strength measurement, find out how strong is the signal that's really being radiated. So not enough radials. And you talk to somebody like Mel, K2KEY, who has 100 ground plane radials under his 80-meter dipole in his backyard, in his front yard. He just happened to have this great opportunity by which they're doing construction in front of his street, and he could lay down all those radios and get all his performance. So does he really need 100? Well, talk to him and he'll say yes. Many a person would say 30 is a very good number. 3 is nowhere near enough. But so coupling energy into the ground, that's one of the factors. Now, the number of radios required and the performance of those radios becomes a hell of a lot less stringent if the antenna is elevated above ground. If I had the resources to take that 80-meter dipole, that 80-meter ground plane antenna, or maybe a 2-meter equivalent, and put it a large number of wavelengths above ground on top of the tower, put it on top of a tower or on top of a tree or something like that, all of a sudden I can get away with murder. I can have very few ground plane radios, and now there's no dirt nearby to couple the signal into, but still the transmission line and the transmitter is still acting like a pump. It is still grabbing electrons from somewhere and pumping them into the radiator that you and I call antenna. And it's got to grab those electrons from somewhere in order to do that, to act like that pump. If I don't have enough ground plane radios, it is pumping electrons from the outer sheath of my coax cable into the radiator. So now my coax cable becomes hot. That's not necessarily bad, but it's something you should know about. So if there's not enough ground plane radios to act like a short circuit in space, so to speak, at that point at the base of your radiator, of your vertical antenna, then your coax cable will become hot. And occasionally that's got a couple of disadvantages where you end up with a brand new pattern you either will like or won't like. If that transmission line in your apartment building runs alongside of your neighbor's television set and it radiates from the cable a lot of signal into the television and gives them television interference, that could create a bit of a problem. In the worst case scenario, you'll have RF in the shack, and if you're using a D104 metal encased mic and you put your lip near the mic and you draw an arc to your lip, you know that something funny is going on. So you can get away with very few and zero ground plane radio. In the case of a Cushcraft Ringo Ranger antenna, let me drop. It has no ground plane radios at all. The net result is that the length of the pipe you mounted to and the way you dress the coax cable coming away from it makes a difference in the way the antenna behaves. Grab six guys who have used a Ringo Ranger Cushcraft antenna, 2 meter ground plane antenna. It's got a ring in the bottom, it's an impedance matching device, a vertical radiator above that, and no ground plane radios at all. Grab six guys or 10 guys, and you'll find out that half of them love the antenna. It's fantastic, works like a charm, not very expensive, and it's lasting reasonably long for them. The other half of the guys hate the antenna because they can't talk to anybody. And the difference is the length of the pipe they mount it to and the way they dress the cable, because the pipe is hot and because the cable is hot. If they have the wrong length of pipe and the wrong way of dressing the cable, they may end up with a null on the horizon and beautiful signal above the horizon and below the horizon, and they get lousy range and not very good reception when they talk to 2 meter repeaters. The problem now is that they have an undefined antenna because it doesn't have ground plane radios. So once you visualize that what's going on at the end of your transmission line is that you're pumping electrons from some place to some other place, and you have to provide that some place, one way or the other, where you don't radiate a signal. That gives you a little bit more of a feel for what the ground plane radios are doing. And maybe I'll create a couple more questions there, Bernie. K2 Yankee Oscar, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Well, first of all, thanks for the detailed explanation. I don't know, other people may be bored by this, but I always find this interesting and a good reminder of what we're doing here when we see on the mic. So following on with what you're saying, specifically in a vertical world where we're in UHF or VHF range, could I then surmise that it is not possible to have too many or too long of radios? That if I somehow could elevate a quarter wave antenna with radials that were 60 feet long and I could keep them going straight out, that would just, at that point, look like a giant Earth to the quarter wave vertical. Is that correct?
As a theoretical experiment, you're absolutely right, Bernie. The length of the radials, you get the most amount of performance out of the radials if they're short by making them a quarter wavelength long. Make them longer than quarter wavelength, they still perform. Put an infinite number of them out there, or put a whole sheet of metal, and now you've got a perfect ground plane system. Believe it or not, there's a much, much simpler technique of making a perfect ground plane system. You can create that infinite sheet of metal, acting like a zillion ground plane radials that all go out to infinity. Simply put the other half of the dipole there. If you generated a pure, vertically polarized, half-wave dipole, that's now a symmetric antenna, the left-hand side is where you're grabbing the electrons from, the right-hand side, I said left-hand side, the bottom half of the dipole, which is a quarter wave long, you're grabbing electrons from it, and you're pumping them into the upper half of the dipole, quarter wavelength long, and remember, in my original discussion, I said that if you've got a perfect half-wave dipole in space, you can put a sheet of metal there and nothing happens. The best perfect ground plane radio system in the world is another quarter wave of wire into an open circuit that's collinear with your radiator. So if you have the resources and you're about to put a zillion ground plane radios up in the air, simply put the other half of the dipole there. For reasons I don't understand, a purely vertically polarized dipole is an extremely unpopular antenna. For the few people who have built one, they love it. It's the equivalent of having a zillion ground plane radials. It's nearly perfect. Feeding it from the center and bringing off the transmission line at a right angle mechanically is a little bit difficult. If you're smart enough, you can put a half wavelength length of wire straight into the air, suspended with a rope to your highest tree or tower or whatever that's nearby, and feed it from the bottom. Now, when you feed the end of a dipole instead of the center, you're feeding something like a 2,000 ohm impedance, resistive impedance, instead of the center of the dipole, which is around 70 ohms. But for a guy who's smart enough to know how to build an impedance matching structure, feeding it from the bottom end can make it work with 99% efficiency. So there's no better way to put a zillion ground plane radios out there than to put one more quarter wavelength of wire collinear with the real radiator out the bottom end, if you know what I mean. And then you're really completing the circuit so that the electrons can be symmetrically pumped from one half to the other. Wonder if that makes some sense, though, Bernie. K2 Yankee Oscar, K2 RYW in the deck pad.
K2YO, Dick.
Rich recognized, we'll get to you in a second. Bernie first, go ahead, Bernie.
Absolutely makes sense. I suspect the reason that a lot of people don't use a full halfway dipole is because of the mechanical issues of having to exit the antenna at a right angle, which is in a vertically polarized world. You've got to have a giant T up there off of my map, at which point my map has to be in the middle, and then it becomes complicated. One last question. Let's say that I went with the quarter wave. I go with a giant piece of sheet metal, one which the XYL would absolutely hate. If I got the idea of, gee, I could replace that with a wire mesh, could I replace the giant piece of sheet metal that is the ground plane with a piece of wire mesh and still get the same effect, assuming that the, let's say the mesh was eighth of an inch apart?
Timed out. No, I heard him completely the whole time. He didn't time out. Bernie, by the way, Bernie, your audio is a little bit low. You got a beautiful carrier into the signal and in the repeater, but you could use twice as much audio. Your audio is about half the volume of what you're hearing from me right now, but you sound good. Whether you make that ground plane radial system, and it's also called the counterpoise meaning it's the place you grab the electrons from and you pump them into the other half of the dipole. A counterpoise can be made out of wires, can be made out of mesh, can be made out of hardware cloth. If this is the best of all worlds, the spacing between the holes, so to speak, between the individual wires, if they're a small fraction of a wavelength, then the radio wave doesn't get a chance to squeeze in there, and you can lay it right on the top of the ground. Once you bring it above the ground and it can't reach Earth, which acts like a dummy load, you can have much bigger spaces between the wires or between the holes of the hardware cloth. And even if a little bit of the RF energy squeezes through, it has very little motivation to do it. You'll still have a good counterpoise system. So many a vertical antenna, like for instance a communications product, station master antenna, one of the kind of antennas that are often used, let me drop, at repeater stations, it has three little stubby things coming out of the bottom, exactly a quarter wavelength long electronically, because that's all they need. It's enough to stop 98% of the current that would normally be flowing down the outside of the coax cable. It acts like a kind of an RF choke in space, and it does the job, so to speak. So very little is required. And if you took those three stubs that are on a station master antenna and replaced them with a tremendous sheet of copper, and you try to carefully measure the difference in performance, without laboratory equipment, the difference would be so small, it would be an academic test. So once the antenna is up in the air, very little ground plane radial system is required. And the three little stubs can be replaced by one single stub if you were feeding it off at right angles and had one little quarter wavelength thing collinear with the real radiator. And don't neglect the idea of feeding it at the bottom. There's nothing magic about bringing the transmission line from the center off at a right angle. You could bring it off a little bit and then parallel to the wire and retune the length of the wire because of the capacitive coupling. You can make that work electronically. Or don't even put an egg insulator in the center. Bring the wire, make the wire completely a half wavelength long and feed it at the bottom. It's essentially what you're doing when you take a 5/8 wave mag mount from an automobile. It's even a little bit longer than half wave long. And you've got the impedance matching device at the bottom, and you're feeding it from the bottom end. 5/8 wave is longer than half wave, if you think about it. And they work like a charm. So feeding at one end works. Let me find out what Rich has got to say about all this. N2 Echo Oscar, the microwave voice of White Plains, K2RIW.
BB2HWW, what a comment.
How are recognized? You're on the list. Go ahead, Rich.
Okay, Dick, into the White Stone, not White Plains. All right, Bernie had asked me about this. We were discussing this during the week. Bernie told me he had very little property where to put radio. He had a big patio in the back. And he wasn't sure what band he wanted to operate. He thought multi-band. And what I suggested to Bernie was a form of a vertical. It's called an inverted L. Because he said he could run wire up and over his roof. So what I suggested he do was run a wire from the ground up vertically and then horizontally as far as he can get it, and put as many radios down as he could. He said he couldn't get many radios down, so I said, in a lure of radios, not as good, but I said, put maybe 3 or 4 ground rods in and parallel them up and try the shield of the cable to that. Like I say, ground rods are not as good as radios, but you do what you can do. And see, and match it with an antenna tuner. And what I thought about later, rather than using coax, because I found that coax, when it's not run into a matched normal system, coax gets very lost, even at low frequencies. Probably the best thing would be the inverted L with open wire lines, one side to the inverted L, one side to as many radios as you can in parallel with ground rods, and run that up to a tuner, and then into a transmitter. This would get him a lower feed line and get him on as many bands as he can.
Rich, did you pass it back to me?
You sure did.
Okay, you stopped kind of abruptly, so I wasn't sure. Okay, there's another whole section that you're addressing right now that I forgot to tell Bernie, and I told him left-handedly, and I didn't make it clear. A good full-wave, full-size half-wave dipole in free space has an impedance of something like 73 ohms resistance. Power is E squared over R. If I was putting 73 volts into that antenna, because it's a 73 ohm resistor, my feed line would be feeding it 1 ampere. So the current that flows from the left side of the dipole to the right side of the dipole during the time that I'm feeding it, the electronic pump could be pumping 1 ampere of RMS current. If you feed it in the center, 73 watts equals 1 ampere into that antenna. That's not the peak current, that's the RMS current. The peak current would be exactly 1.4 amperes. If you feed it at the one end instead of the center, instead of it being 73 ohms of impedance that you see in the center, when you feed it from one end, you'll see something like 2,000 ohms. When you're feeding 2,000 ohms, but you're still feeding it the same 73 watts, you're now pumping milliamperes into it instead of amperes. Therefore, if you're willing to feed the bottom of the antenna, and it's a half wavelength long, because you're feeding such a high impedance, because you're drawing so little current into your drive mechanism, your pump now is pumping a high voltage at low current. Therefore, the need for the ground plane radio system almost disappears. A number of guys have taken a 20-meter long antenna electronically. It's really, let me drop, a helically wound tubular thing where electronically it resonates at 20 meters, but it's a half wavelength long. They mounted it on the railing of the balcony of their apartment at the 20th floor of the building. Their, I call it balcony, or you know what I mean, veranda, the thing that hangs off the side of the apartment building. They used the metal railing as the ground plane radio system, and because they were feeding it at one end, it's more than good enough. So feeding at one end has got a whole lot of advantages. When you build the L-shaped antenna that Rich was now just telling you about, if you made it electronically a half wavelength long, in other words, the vertical portion plus the horizontal portion equals a half wave, the impedance you see at one end is now like 2,000 ohms. You could almost do with no ground plane radios at all, one simple stake in the ground, and I'll bet you you'll get something like 90% efficiency. It's a subset of a kind of an NFED ZEP antenna, which was a kind of popular antenna in the early 20s and 30s, where they fed it with open wire line. One end of the open wire line went to the antenna, which quite often was L-shaped and sometimes straight out parallel, but half wavelength long was one of the preferred directions, length. And the other half of the open wire line went nowhere, and it worked. No ground plane radios at all, because they're feeding such a high impedance. So, there's lots and lots of ways you can make an antenna once you understand the pumping action, the impedance of the pumping action. All of a sudden, ground plane radios are nowhere near as important. Now, a half-wave dipole, let me pick a number, 20 feet in the air, is going to have a vertical elevation angle of radiation that's a little bit on the high side, because you've got a real dipole above ground and you've got a mirror image of one below the ground. So that RF energy, the ground is somewhat of a mirror. Well, it's not a perfect mirror. RF energy can be coupled into it, and it's got some loss mechanism, particularly in the case of a pure quarter wave vertically polarized ground plane radial system that's right on the ground. You can couple quite a bit of your energy into the Earth in that situation. So in the case of a half-wave dipole above ground, you will have a pretty high angle of radiation, and you will have some coupling into Earth. The L-shaped object is still going to have some of that property. And so if you're putting down a radial at all, I think I would lay one radial on the ground directly parallel with the L-shaped object that's in the air. I think, and I would feed one versus the other. I think you get the maximum benefit with the minimum amount of materials used for that particular antenna. I haven't actually done that. There's a lot of speculation on my part. After we talk to Howie, I'm going to send it over to Mel. He's going to tell me of all the antennas he and his merry group have got.
Repeater, RXE.
He's going to tell me whether or not any of his guys at the Kings County Radio Club had done anything like that and how successful it was. Let's find out what Howie's got to say. WB2HWW, K2RIW on the deck net.
Just many years ago when I was on 2 meters as a young kid, a lot of guys in my neighborhood, and actually one of the guys started this thing, is we used to buy TV rabbit ears, take the two rabbit ears out of the rabbit ear, out of the mouth, and put them on a piece of plastic and make two 19-inch whips, adjust it for the best SWR, and mount it out on a piece of wooden stick. So you can make a very inexpensive antenna for $2 or $3, just for 2 meters or 440. One vertical, one horizontal, and feeding it in the middle. And we used to use RG58U for $4 or $5. We had a pretty good antenna, stick it outside of a window.
More evidence that as you make the antenna high up in the air, far away from the ground, all kinds of things will suddenly work extremely well. And if you're smart enough to make it half wave or a multiple of a half wave, the need for the ground plane radio system, the amount of current you're launching is sedan small, but again, you can get away with murder. So the kind of wire antennas you're talking about, Sarah Bernie, are not very expensive, even though you've got a small piece of property. Bear in mind that human beings do not see wire. We amateurs look for it. Normal human beings walk around and they never see wire. So you can put all kinds of antennas through the trees and on the roof of the house and whatever, all kinds of wires that no one else is ever going to see, and experiment with them. And there's a lot of advantage in having more than one. One that favors north-south, one that favors east-west, feed them in combinations and whatever. When you talk to your buddy in England, antenna number one works better. When you talk to your buddy in Michigan, antenna number two works better, and so on. So some of the details you're worried about are nowhere near as bad as you think when you go and do it. K2 Yankee Oscar, K2RIW on the deck net. Give us a little more audio, Bernie.
Okay, very good. We're actually talking about two different subjects here. I was talking to Rich about HF stuff. My questions tonight were specifically in the UHF-EHF range, taking my understanding of HF, and then when you shrink it down, the proportions appear to change a bit. So this has been a very good conversation. I've got what I need. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Dick. I do have an update on a telephone system RFI question from a couple of weeks ago, if anybody cares. Back to Dick, K2YO.
Okay, Bernie, once we go down the list, we'll come back and hear your RFI report. And good luck with those antenna experiments. Come back periodically and tell Rich and me and Mel what you find, what works, what doesn't work, and maybe we can make some further suggestions. Nowadays, we amateurs almost never, on HF frequencies, even on the lower VHF frequencies, we never build our transmitters, we never build our antennas anymore. The old amateurs used to do that. When Mel and I first cut our teeth in ham radio as teenagers, you couldn't buy very many transmitters, you had to build. Well, nowadays, we don't build transmitters and receivers. We buy them. We don't build feed lines, we buy them. But the antennas, we still build a lot of them. There's 5,000 kinds of antennas, and I'm not kidding. You open up the latest antenna engineering handbook by Volakis, and you look at the 53 chapters written by 100 different experts, and you realize those are just the 53 classes of antennas. There's lots and lots of antenna types. So no matter which one you've got, there's always the belief that there might be one better, and keep experimenting. And so it's a fun thing to experiment with. The next person who had a real question that I remember was Mel. I'm going to go over to him before we go over to Joe. Mel, you said you've got a whole lot of questions. Let's find out what you're talking about. K2KEY, K2LIW.
WB2HWW with a part of comment, Dick.
We'll come back to you, Howie, right after Mel. Go ahead, Mel.
I'm just saying, you know, I most likely, instead of having any questions, I should have to look at, and I'll dig out the email, and we'll have plenty of questions for sure. Comments on radio. Well, I did my experiment, of course, with all kinds of antennas. Being right now, the only real band conditions that count for anything is like on the low frequencies of 75 or 80 meters or some 40 meter activity. And, you know, you're right, Dick, when you say you need several antennas. There's no doubt that that full wave group I have outside works excellent when I'm talking to my friends in Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, down South Maryland, you know, etc. But if you get on to work to some of the DX stations on the low end of the band down around the CW portion, around 3,500, you find that that loop antenna really is somewhat, as they say, a cloud warmer. And I switch over to the vertical antenna. Let me let it drop. Now, the vertical antenna, you just said, has 100 radios. I had the opportunity, of course, that time to put down 100 radios without any of the big much sweat. How much of it is overkill? Well, according to Jerry Civic, we were talking about earlier, that anything over 36 radios, in other words, he went up to 36 radios and then started making measurements. He saw improvement as he went up to 36 radios. And then after that, it sort of tapered off somewhat. But it seems that 36 radios seem to work the best. And they're forced, of course. As far as the ground screen, as I said, I used a window screen. I put together a lot of window screens, and I wound up with about 8x12, I think it wound up as my ground screen, 8x12 feet, and I buried. And what else? Let me see one more thing. As far as vertical dipole, yes, you remember I did that experiment with the vertical dipole. I found, for some reason, a vertical dipole does not perform as good as somewhat what we would call a sloper. As I said, if I took a dipole to experiment with it approximately making an angle of approximately 28 degrees with the ground level at the point where the dipole comes down to ground, and at that point with an angle of about 28 degrees, that seems to optimize the ground plane, the ground point where the dipole, the so-called vertical dipole, seems to work a lot better for some reason. And made this experiment, a few other people checked and blue seems to confirm it. Let me let it drop one more time.
Bill, please talk just a little bit louder. I'll explain why later.
Hey? Everybody says you talk too loud on the other repeater, so all right. I'll talk a little louder into this one. As I said, to make that antennas the diverted L's and all, and just to use some ground rod, it really does not become an effective antenna. Ground rods, again, through all the experiments, not only mine, there were a few others, including Jerry Civic, what he did. He did a lot of work in this subject. You know, he did a lot of paperwork. And he also, seems like the ground, regular ground rods, you can put down a number of them. In fact, I got a lot of ground rods down here, and I've, tried terminating at times antennas to the ground rods. I don't think you've got what you're looking for in the antenna system using ground rods. And again, like I say, it depends on what you're going to do. If you're looking to work DX, it seems like you need several antennas, like on 80 meters. You need the loop and the cloud warmer. You need the vertical, I believe, at the lower takeoff angle, etc. So it's I think it's a situation, Dick, like you said, that no one antenna seems to fit the bill, over.
Very fine, Mel. You gave us two or three really good pieces of information there. Number one, you repeated the fact that Jerry Civic, with real backyard experiments of radiated signal efficiency, found out that something like 36 radials is a point of diminishing return. That as you go from 36 to infinity, you get improvement, but not great improvement. But as you go from 1 to 36, you get continuous improvement. Number two, it told us that just simple ground rods work pretty well when it comes to measuring standing wave ratio, but when it comes to measuring antenna efficiency, a simple ground rod is not good enough, because you could say the RF energy is like a great big fat cucumber around your antenna, and it's around your antenna, the radiating portion and the counterpoise portion. So this great big fat cucumber of RF energy around your antenna, if it sees Earth, you're going to be coupling RF energy into that Earth, and the Earth is a dummy load. And so therefore, even though it's not obvious, you're coupling RF energy into the Earth using nothing but ground rods. Because ground plane radials, if there's enough of them, and if the spacing between them is small enough compared to a wavelength, that's what you're really doing with 36 radials, you're making the spacing wavelength-wise between the wires small enough that the RF energy can't squeeze in there, waveguide the uncut-off, so to speak, and therefore not as much RF gets coupled into the Earth, and you start running higher efficiency. But whether you use grounding rods, ground plane radials, or whatever, if the antenna is electronically a half wave, and you're feeding it at the bottom, all of a sudden, because you're feeding a much higher impedance, and because the center of high current is now in the middle of that structure that's higher above the ground, when it's a half wavelength long, the center of it's now a quarter wavelength high, minimum, and as such, that's the part that does most of the coupling into the Earth. You've already got it elevated, so to speak. And so lots of guys have discovered that a half-wave electronic radiator, fed at one end, you can almost get away with no ground plane radials at all. The Ringo Ranger tries to do that. The end-fed ZEP does that. The inverted L does that. Any half-wave radiator that you put on the veranda or on the balcony of your apartment and use nothing but the metal railing as a ground plane works like a charm for a bunch of reasons. It's up high, even if you are coupling current into the railing. It's a radiator high in the air, and it's got nothing left to do except radiate that signal into space. Well, you could couple some of it into the plaster of the house, but that's nowhere near as lossy as Earth is. Howie wanted to make some comments on all this, and see what Howie's going to say. You got it, Howie. KQLIW on the tech man.
KQIQ with a comment.
QIQ on the list. Go ahead, Howie.
All right, can you hear me okay, Dick?
You sound good.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to make a comment about vertical dipole. I have found the same thing that Mel has found, especially on 15 and 10 and 11 meters. Back in the good old days of VP, if you didn't have it exactly, if you went vertical, it worked better, even locally, slightly off of horizontal. But I have an inexpensive antenna that people can make. We made these as kids when we were on 2 meter FM back when I was in the 70s. We would take two pieces of TV antenna, like from a rabbit ear. Take two rabbit ears, take a piece of plastic, put two screws through it, and use it as a sensor insulator, and stuck that on a plastic mop or something, stick it out your window. You can make an antenna very simple. Use RG58U or RG8U, and for less than $4 from Radio Shack or from a local hardware store, you bought your little rabbit ear for $1.99, and you took the antennas out from the rabbit ears and used just the rod. Sorry, they were adjustable. That was pretty cool, Vic. So you can make inexpensive antennas that way, halfway fed. So the other gentleman can make a nice little 2 meter antenna for less than maybe $10 today. And yes, Dick, I have found out that if you mount the antenna slightly off the vertical at a slight angle, it works better. I never figured out why, but I found out that a vertical dipole did radiate, but not as well if it was slightly off of center. Go ahead. Off of this vertical axis.
I got some guesses on that. Both you and Mel are saying that a pure vertical antenna is not as good as a sloper. And I am guessing that what you guys use as the support was a local interferer. In other words, that you're putting a pure vertical dipole against a big, fat, wide tree with nice, thick sap inside, which is a conductor. You've got a local dissipating device. Well, if you put it directly alongside of a tower, the tower is giving you some interference, particularly in certain directions. So a sloper gets you away from the tree, gets you away from the tower. That's my guess, because a pure vertical antenna has to radiate well if it really is in free space. I think the problem is that many of us realize that the support structure is a problem. If you've got two trees that are high enough, and you string a string between the tops of the two trees, and from the center of that string, you mount your pure vertical dipole, I think that's going to work well. That's another experiment we can try with the mounted between the two trees with a bridge, so to speak, over the top, and then experiment with pure vertical or sloper. Boy, that's a fun experiment to find out what really is going on. A number of you guys, I'm changing subjects for a second here. Let me drop. A number of you guys within the sound of my voice have got an active computer right now, and I'd love any one of you guys to dial www.qrz.com. Right now, when I go to qrz.com, I get nothing, as if it ain't there. At first, I thought my internet connection wasn't there. I'm getting email, I'm getting Google, but I can't get qrz.com. Temporarily, I think they're off the air, but maybe it's me. Maybe my ISP just doesn't have a connection to them tonight. Second of all, Mel and anyone else who signs into the TechNet, periodically you guys should go to www.amateurradio.tv. Amateur radio with a double R between the end of amateur and the beginning of radio, amateurradio.tangovictor, and dial into the TechNet and listen to yourself. That way you'll know immediately whether or not your audio is high enough. And so you'll see that a number of people who sign into the TechNet, sometimes it's a little hard to hear you on the recording, because your audio is a little bit low. So that way you'll know immediately what you sound like, how good a question you asked, how good an answer you got, and what you sound like on the TechNet. Okay, Glenn, KC2QIQ. Bring us up to speed on all the subject, Glenn, K2LIW.
Dick, the server on QRZ down. N2RSO.
Thank you, Mr. RSO. How do you know it's down? How did you find out? In other words, you dialed to them recently also?
I just dialed them now, and it says the Firefox can't find the server at www.qrz.com. So my guess is that they're off the air, probably updating their server.
Okay, and Mr. RSO, I do recommend you go to amateurradio.tv and listen to yourself. You'll find out that your audio is one-third as loud as mine is right now. Glenn, KC2QIQ, he's a guy who's normally got a lot of audio. You got it, Glenn.
Okay, Dick. Thanks, Glenn. Good evening, Dick and Mel and everybody on the net. I dialed up the repeater. I did a ping on the site, and apparently their server is up, but the, whatever the web page is definitely down, so it's not really there. Just a quick thing, I was listening to before about a ground plane system for VHF and UHF, and this reminds me of something I did about a year ago where I had a vertical quarter wave antenna, and I was experimenting with UHF and VHF, and I wanted to get a good ground plane system. And one of the things I found when I was mounting this on a little tripod, I just wanted to set up a quick VHF and UHF antenna, and I just wasn't getting a good ground plane on the antenna, because I found that if you took a 26-inch bicycle rim and basically pull the bearing out of the center, feed the coax up to where basically the old spindle used to be through the center, run the coax through there, and then mount the antenna to just the top base of the 26-inch bicycle rim, one of the aluminum ones, around the outside, and wow, what performance that'll wake up your quarter-wave antenna in a hurry. That goes to you, Dick.
Very crafty idea, Glenn. You'd be amazed how many amateurs have really used the best of what I think is the amateur spirit. You know you're going to build an antenna, you know you're going to build a circuit, you know you're going to build a transmitter, a receiver, a resonator, whatever. You dig into your junk box, you go into the backyard, you find all the materials that can possibly go into that object you want to build. Then you find out, is there a way you can build a circuit around what you've got? And necessity is the mother of invention, so to speak. Unless you've got $1 zillion that you want to waste, using what you've got sometimes with substitutes can work out like a charm, occasionally works out better. got to be a little bit careful. In the case of a Yagi antenna, if the original design asked for 3/16 diameter elements out of solid aluminum and a 1-inch diameter boom with the elements insulated from the boom, you don't want to change the diameter of the elements without doing some retuning. That's critical. The space in between the elements is not so critical. So there are times you can get away with murder, and there are times where the eye says, gee, that's good enough, and the radio wave behaves differently. Where we all are helping each other doing this great big experiment to find out how radio and wireless really work, and we're teaching each other that subject. And there are times when it isn't common sense what works and what doesn't work. After discussing it, we eventually dig in and find out why. The very next person who signed in, who I think had a yes, was Joe. Hope I'm not skipping over anyone. I think it was Joe, W-A-2-R-Y-Y. Go right ahead with your question, Joe. How are things in Patro, K-2-R-I-W, and the deck man?
One final word on this deck, K-2-K-E-Y.
Dick, I have a comment or a question before you move on antennas, please.
Okay, Joe, you're going to have to hang in there. Looks like Mel and Howie first. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, you mentioned about why does the slope antenna away from the vertical, the vertical dipole, why it slopes, it seems to work better. I questioned that also, and the support I had for it is I used a piece of bamboo stick, or an 8-foot long one, that comes off the tree limb, sticks out, basically stuck out over the middle of the yard. And the same effect, I thought also, if the support for the originally for the vertical dipole was actually a pulley up on the tree about 65 feet. And I said, oh, well, it's got to be because I'm moving it as I was experimenting from the point where it's adjacent to the tree. But what has showed up, I have a vertical. My 65-foot vertical is basically in the tree. It's held off the stalk of the tree by a PVC, piece of PVC pipe all down the line. But it works excellent, and it is closer to the tree. But for some reason, when you go to that vertical dipole type of design, it works better as a somewhat of a sloper. So I eliminated that idea, like you said, of possibly the tree, Dick. I don't know what it is. There's no metallics around or anything. I ruled that all out. I really cannot come up with really, but I can tell you by just looking, listening to the receiver, and I had the pulleys and everything, and able to change, you know, the angle from the radio room with a rope, with a cord, the angle of the dipole to the ground. I was actually peeking it, and this is what the final result was. I do not know the precise answer. Go ahead.
Fantastic. All right, there's a man who's done it, been there and done it. And I think you've told me something like a 28-degree angle was the best. And I'm wondering, Mel, when you tilted your sloper from pure vertical over to something like a 28-degree angle, I presume with reference to pure vertical, did it favor a particular direction? In other words, if the top of the antenna tilts over to the northeast, which would be toward Europe, did it give you a better signal toward Europe and a lesser signal to the southwest, which would be toward Alabama or Texas, so to speak? Did you see any directionality characteristics while you tilted it? And what was your favorite tilt angle that worked best in Manhattan Beach? K2KEY, K2LIW.
Okay, let me say this is K2KEY. Let me set the experiment up. I had a piece of bamboo coming off, like I said, about 65 feet up. I have a pulley in there that I pulled up the dipole, one end of the dipole. The dipole did not have any bounds or anything like that. It had one of those dipole-type molded tees that they sell at the ham fest. The bottom end of the dipole, I had a lead sinker, a fishing sinker. And at that point, I put a fish cord that went through my back support, which is about 50 feet, 45, yes, close to 50 feet, that holds up one end of the loop antenna. And I was able, from the radio room then, to pull the dipole up towards the horizontal, or let it out to the vertical, just let it hang loose, and it would hang perfectly vertical.
I noticed that when it makes this so-called 20, approximately 28 degree angle of ground, every signal seems to improve. Not only are the DX, it's just like the band T-Mobile comes alive more. All the signals come up. No favorable. I just can't understand what really is happening when you change this angle somewhat. It's like, I guess if you were in contact with somebody, they'd say, what you do, put some power on. Because I honestly saw at the time with the scope, you know, that more persistent scope that I used for just hooking the audio so I could look at peak signals, I could actually tell you that I saw at times minimum at least 3 dB and possibly 5 dB difference just by changing the tilt stick over.
Okay, now give me a couple of details here. I'm guessing this was a 40-meter dipole, and you're suspending it to 50, 60 feet in the air, or tell me what band were you on, and what was the altitude of your support? And therefore, from that I can tell the lead sinker in the bottom of the dipole, how close was that to Earth, and as you tilted it, the bottom is getting further from Earth, and maybe that's a factor. So tell us a little bit more about frequencies and lengths and altitudes here, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay. 40 meters CW band. The tilt, as you say, well, when the sinker hung full, you know, it's when the vertical from that 65-foot support up there, when the vertical hung completely straight down, it was just, the sinker was just about touch ground. As you pulled it about 28 degrees, it came to the point where I was able to tie it to, I was able to tie the vertical at that point, my 28 degree, in other words, tie-off point. Only a maybe, I'll give it a 2 foot off ground. That's about it. In other words, when I pulled it out, it didn't go out very far, so it was able to be tied off, and like I say, you could touch easily, touch the bottom of it over.
Okay. So the fact that the bottom was almost at Earth level, because the length of your half-wave dipole and the altitude of your support were almost the same length, 65 feet, so the bottom of the dipole is near Earth, that may have been a factor. I'd love to know what would happen if your 65-foot-long dipole was suspended from a support that is 80 feet in the air, and then you tilted it. See, there was two factors going on here. You have the sloping action going on, and as you did the sloping, the bottom of the dipole is being lifted further away from Earth. So maybe that's a factor. Interesting. We've got to speculate some more about it. You need a taller tower, Mel. Just tell me when you're going to raise the tower, and I'll be part of your erecting crew. Let's see what Howie wants to add to this. That's HWW, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Hi, Dick. That's the first thing that I found out, is that if anything got near the end of the vertical radiator or the dipole, got near the dipole, touched the dipole, that would really create a problem. Now, what I was going to ask is, how far do you want to get the dipole from? Hold on. How far do you want to get the dipole away from the supporting structure? Because what I used to do, I used to hang it off of the side of a wall or the side of the building. That's what I used to tie it to, you know, from one side of the building to a lower level, like from one ledge to another ledge. And I try to get at least a quarter away to do this experiment. But I did find out that if you had anything near the end of the dipole, it would definitely really affect its performance. Go ahead.
Another comment.
Okay, yeah, Mel recognized. When you and I set up the pole, we are creating an affected area in space. Every half-wave dipole that's in free space has an affected area of 0.13 lambda squared. In other words, if it's 80 meters, and the wavelength is 80 meters, and I square that as 6,400 square meters times 0.13, you work that out and it comes out to be around 8,500 square meters for an 80-meter dipole. So that is its real effective area when it's receiving. By the laws of reciprocity, it's got the exact same effective area when it's transmitting. if your eyes operated at 80 meters and you looked at that dipole in free space, you would see an oval, you would see a black oval of material, so to speak, around that dipole. It extends a little bit beyond the ends of the dipole, this oval, and crosswise, the short distance, the oval is probably something in the vicinity of an eighth of a wavelength or 3/16 of a wavelength. So that area, and that area, by the way, is an area of